Blog Talk Radio.
Nella fantasia io vedo un mondo giusto, lì tutti vivono in pace e in onestà. Io sogno l'anime che sono sempre
fondo all'anima.
fantasia, io vedo un mondo chiaro.
In my blood, this is what I'm good at, this is what I'm meant to do. Check it.
Back in the lab again, back on the road. Cracks fit on tracks when I rap, shit is so. Oh, they gonna love it, but they bugging when I speak. So run and tell your cousins, get your budgets when I leak. Back to the pen, pen, paper to the pad. Tracks so authentic, yes, the haters getting mad. Back to the music like a user needed bad. Never could kick the habit, I'm an addict for the lab. Words turn to verbs, verbs burst through the mics. Mics like when I write, cause I light when I write. Back to the rhythm, living, can I get a rhyme? Plus a line, it'll kill them every time I spit, I shine. Back to the booth, goosebumps, give me chills. I'm the truth, I'm the loops, oops, scoops with the skills. Soundproof on the walls gives me the peace of mind. Like it's me and my rhymes, ain't nothing but some time. This is my life, and I'm doing what I please. I'ma write these lines, I'ma spit these freeze. One mic, one pen, headphones and all. One booth, one truth, and I'm back for y'all. This is hip-hop, it's the essence of my soul. The reason that I'm here, the reason that I go. One mic, one pen, headphones and all. One booth, one truth, and I'm back for y'all. Back in the studio, back on the grind. I'm living every minute, trying to nurse another line. Does this rhyme with that? No, it doesn't give a scratch. Add this instead of that, now you got another track. Back in the backstage, waiting to perform. Working on the words, words waiting to be born. Warning from the swarm of fans, waiting for your turn. Freeing in my head, that's the cry for the storm. Back in the battle, raps, tracks like my scars. And my raps like the battle axe, rap for the stars. Every word is ammunition, and I'm spitting, hitting hard. Written, kicking, vicious system, sticking. Rippers pick apart. Sacrifice is my ambition and my reason on this earth. Grab a mic, it's my religion and the beat is my church. Verses are my sermons and my service is a prayer. And my prayers are getting answered every day that I'm here. This is my life and I'm doing what I please. I'ma write these lines, I'ma spit these freeze. One mic, one pen, headphones and all. One booth, one truth and I'm back for y'all. This is hip-hop, it's the essence of my soul. The reason that I'm here, the reason that I go. One mic, one pen, headphones and all. One booth, one truth, and I'm back for y'all. Back for the fans, fam, damn, I never leave. Back for the late nights, right until I sleep. Back for the line that I never got to write, because I didn't have a pen when it came into my sight. Back for the pen, back for the pad, and I'm back for every opportunity I never had. Back for the gift that I will never waste, or mistakes that I take to the grave when I break. Back for the squad, back for the fam. Back for cardiac, tragic in the camp. Back for Stitcher Magic, wisdom in the fam. And every fan that believed in me, I never gave a chance. Back
back for the love, for the craft that I hold, for the fire that's within and the ice it is cold. Back for my boys and I'm back for that life, and I'm back for a promise that I made to my wife. This is my life and I'm doing what I please. I'ma write these lines, I'ma spit these freeze. One mic, one pen, headphones and all, one booth, one truth, and I'm back for y'all. This is hip-hop, it's the essence of my soul, the reason that I'm here, the reason that I go. One mic, one pen, headphones and all, one booth, one truth, and I'm back for y'all.
time I saw you, baby, standing under some natural light, yeah. It was only coming from the window, but it made you look like an angel. I fell in love with you.
Remember me? Old 33 Larry Bird. 'Cause I'm so fly like a G6S. It's a basic. Hate it, just face it. me, you look right, listen here. Yo, this could be your chance, yo, this could be romance, yo, this could be the night, yeah.
I want you to show up from the window to the floor, from the center to the filling, man, I need a little more. It's a tension that I crave, so tonight can set it off. Tonight can set it off.
If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd spread my wings out and take off in the sky.
I gotta get this money, that's all I know. I'm ballin' out, girl, cause I'm so
fly.
I know, oh, you don't know no one
like me.
It might be that I'm so, oh, close to the ground and I'm down here dealing with real life. It make me wanna take you by the hand like this is quick as your clothes, I'll take you higher. Baby, just so you know, I'm a rider. And if I'm on the road, you know I'm thinking about you till I fly back home. I'm telling you, I wanna be the
kind of guy
that I always wanna be there for you. Go through the stormiest weather just so we can be together.
If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd spread my wings out and take off in the sky. If I could fly.
If you wanna see a star, I could be a Superman in the air, I could rescue you. I could let you hold my hand, I will let you go almost anywhere if you wanna go far. Cloud nine, only for the night, you look good and I wanna make you mine. But about time, I gotta catch a flight, I hate to say it, baby girl, but your time's up.
Time's up.
I guess you out of luck, girl. I'll be back
and we can travel the world.
Cause baby, you ain't gotta worry about a thing. I can put you under my wings.
If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd spread my wings out and take off in the sky. If I could fly, if I could fly, I'd soar through these clouds watching planes go by. And as I go by,
I'll be looking down on you, you'll be looking up at me. Soon you will see, we'll be free.
Shelly Nunchuck from the Shelly Nunchuck Show, and welcome, 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 a little furball co-host, Jackie Chan, Kitty, and Rocky Balboa, both of them are doing a little, like, grooming on themselves and cuddling up, so thank goodness they're being good. Well, anyway, I got a few topics to talk about today, and I'll be playing music, but the first thing I'd like to talk about is the Vienna Protocol. Now, the thing is, what's been going on is the ALS challenge with the water bucket, but you know, what it's gotten to a point, and it's great that it has, you know, raised awareness more and money and such, but the thing now, it's getting to the point where people are actually getting hurt from, you know, doing this over stupid things. And I know people have good intentions, but sometimes I'm looking at some of them and they're like, it's like a 15 seconds fame to get them attention. And I'm sitting here going, the point of it was really to, you know, help raise awareness and money. But now I think people are, like, even saying, I have no idea what ALS is and blah, 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 this and that. And I'm like, well, why are you doing it in the first place? But you're supposed to be donating money and there's more into it. But there is actually something I wanted to bring up. Now, this is something I want people to pass around. Now, I don't care if you don't say you got the information from me. This is not the information that I wrote. This is actually a statement where they're in the process of finding a real cure. And this is something that I do, hopefully people can actually look up. It's called the Deanna Protocol, and you can actually look it up. And it's actually on a Facebook page, Dr. Mehmet Oz, and it says, where I found it was off a friend's book page, a friend's Facebook, which they actually posted. And where I click onto the link, and it says the first page, it says, this was back in February 11, 2013. And it says the person's name, Dila Nova, D-E space L-A space N-O-V-A-L, and then again, D-E space L-A space N-O-V-A-L, and it goes to Dr. Mehmet Oz, Dr. M-E-H-M-E-T Oz. And this is something I'd like to read a statement in. As I'm reading the statement, I will not take any phone calls while I'm reading this. And the Deanna Protocol, a cure for Lou Gehrig's disease. And I do apologize. I have trouble pronouncing things, but I will try to pronounce them to the best I can. ALS, a.k.a. Lou Gehrig's disease, is a terrible, cruel disease all the way around, but especially because the person's mind is usually quite sharp while they endure the suffering of a body that betrays them. They are helpless as they lose the ability to walk, write, type, speak, and swallow. It is a deadly illness for which there is currently no cure, but a new treatment has been shown to slow or even stop progression. Unfortunately, most doctors are not recommending the Deanna Protocol to their parents with ALS because the Deanna Protocol success has been documented through personal testimony as the result of scientific studies. Kind of makes you think, though. that thing is with, you know, with anything that does seem to help with medications nowadays, doesn't it? No? Well, what am I saying? I'm not a doctor, but they're, you know, going with the statement. This is about change. Most likely, as the Deanna Protocol is finally being tested on lab mice with ALS at the University of South Florida under the direction of Domenico Agnostino. Perhaps when this research is completed and doctors see that Deanna's D-E-A-N-N-A protocol slows or possibly even reverses the progression of ALS in lab mice, then doctors will recommend the Deanna protocol to their patients with ALS. Until then, word of mouth is largely the means by which ALS patients will learn of this treatment. The Deanna Protocol was developed by Dr. Vincent Tadone, a retired orthopedic surgeon. His daughter, Deanna, was diagnosed with ALS about 5 years ago. Dr. Tadone was heartbroken, as any father would be, to learn that there was no cure and no viable treatment for his precious daughter, a beautiful new bride and young attorney. About half of all people diagnosed with ALS only live about 3 years. The other half usually die within another 2 years. ALS is a let me try to pronounce this the best I can. I'm going to bring up the page. Hold on. And this fire engine's going by, so forgive me about that. One moment, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Hope everything's all right over there. There's a bunch of fire engines going somewhere. It's a lot of noise this morning, so I do apologize for that, but I hope wherever it's going, everyone is safe over there. ALS is a neurodegenerative disorder involving the neurons of the motor system in the brain and spinal cord. The disorder was first described as RAN in 1850. This description was then expanded in 1873 by Chart. C-H-A-R-C-O-T, who emphasized the involvement of the corticospinal tracts. In the United States, ALS is often referred to as Lou Gehrig's disease, after the famous ball player who was stricken by the disease in the midst of his career. In Europe, the term motor neuron disease is preferred. Although this term can also be used to designate the class of disorders of which ALS is only one entity, other disorders which fall under the category of motor neuron disease include primary lateral sclerosis, spinal muscular atrophy, and progressive bulbar palsy. What is DNA protocol? The DNA protocol is an investigational treatment for ALS, an over-the-counter supplement called AKG, alpha-ketoglutarate. It's ALPH-KETOGLUTARATE, 18 to 20 grams per day. The main ingredient include arginine, alpha-ketoglutarate, nicotinamide, adenine, dinucleotide, GABA, glutathione, IDB-non, and ubiquinol. What is the winning fight? I'm bringing the page up. There's a lot about this here. What is winning the fight? A treatment called the DNA protocol, which provides energy to the energy-deprived cells and balances the level of glutamate in the body to slow and stop the progression of neurodegenerative diseases, NDS, to date. Several individuals diagnosed with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, or Alzheimer's disease have improved significantly and or have stabilized after following the DNA protocol under the supervision of their respective physicians. Seeking to perfect this protocol to eventually provide a treatment for individuals with other NDSs, such as multiple sclerosis and Parkinson's disease. The first phase of our statement protocol focuses on stopping nerve cell death in persons with NDS, which will stabilize their physical condition and slow deterioration of the nerves and muscles. Next phase of treatment focuses on repairing damaged nerve cells and stimulating the growth of new nerve cells in the body, which reverses damage caused by NDS. Neurodegenerative diseases are aggressive and fatal, and there's no known cure. Well, I guess they're working. See, this does, I said that this was a cure, but they said like no known treatment exists. But this is, if they're going saying reverse, then this really is something possible cure. So if you're reversing something, it's kind of going to be like almost a possible cure. So that's why I said possible cure, because if it's reversing something, that's kind of got to mean along the lines of possible cure. And it says, until recently, no known treatment existed. In providing a treatment for individuals affected by NDS, it will prolong the lives of patients and offer them a better quality of life until a cure is found. Seeking to give individuals with NDS the one gift they are often told is out of reach, hope. Winning the Fight Incorporated, otherwise known as WTF. Yeah, I know that's kind of WTF, I know what you're thinking, but no, it's Winning the Fight Inc. is a 100% volunteer 501(c)(3) nonprofit organization with a home base in Tampa, Florida, and a network of volunteers and donors around the world, dedicated to raising awareness about neurodegenerative diseases, NDS, as well as seeking and funding new treatments for NDS. Strive to slow the progression of these diseases to extend the lives of those affected and enhance quality of life until a cure is found. Raising funds by hosting events, internet campaigning, and also by submitting grant proposals to a variety of prospective corporate and nonprofit donors. Winning the Fight consists of a board of directors, a medical liaison, and a sizable network of loyal volunteers to run the organization and raise money nationwide in Europe and Canada. Also rely on a team of scientists to conduct research. Within Volunteer Network, there are specialists in neuroscience, finance, business, and information technologies, along with attorneys and physicians. These individuals graciously donate their time, services, and expertise to help WTF expand and improve. Due to the fact that WTF is a comp- comprised entirely of volunteers, they're able to dedicate all net proceeds of their mission to discover and to test treatments to people with NDS and to promote ND awareness. It is imperative that the focus on stopping or decelerating the progressing of these diseases to allow affected individuals to survive longer and also achieve a better quality of life until a cure is found. They've already discovered an ND treatment that has been successful in several patients and currently conducting laboratory studies to confirm our testimony evidence. Winning the fight, volunteers maintain relationships with other nonprofits focused on neurodegenerative diseases by providing volunteer services and participating in fundraising and awareness events hosted by these organizations. Our volunteers currently maintain relationships with the ALS Association, Johns Hopkins, Robert Packett Center for ALS Research. They aim to continue networking and offering services with the nonprofit committee and to develop relationships with organizations focused on fighting both ALS and other neurodegenerative diseases. If you have ALS or know someone who does, please contact Dr. Vincent Tarone to find out how you can get on the Deanna Protocol. His email address is V as in Victor, M as in Michael, T as in Tom, E as in Elephant, D as in David, O, and as in Nancy, E, at gmail.com. Email for information, it's info@winningthefight.net. Marketing@winningthefight.net. And mailing, Winning the Fight, Incorporated, 701 Warren Road, Lutz, L-U-T-Z, Florida, 33548. And you can actually, you know, later on, you can actually go back and listen to this again to get the information. So that's definitely something worthwhile checking out. Okay, let me bring up some more music since I've read all that. I want to see what song. I'm actually going to play The Fighter by Cardiac and Sacrifice and play a couple more songs, and I'll be back.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands take, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Facing this certainty, the brakes ain't hurting me. Gain on, a bomb of my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stopping, have a promise to prove. I'm a fighter, it's not an option to lose.
Thank you.
Though, and I read about the Deanna Protocol, which was actually, you know, it's a possible cure for ALS. So the information, go there and check it out. Okay. What I'm going to do, I'm going to look, I got the Jackie Chan book that I want to read from there. So I'm going to play a couple songs. I misplaced the book here, and I'm trying to look for it. So I'll be back, and I'm going to play Star Tonight featuring Cardiac and Laura Lee. I'll play a couple songs, and then when I come back, I'll be playing. I'll be reading a little bit from Jackie Chan's book, and I'll be right back.
It's Cardiac and Laura Lee.
Right now, so it's harder to speak, pause. Man, I gotta get mine, cause the devil's outside, and it's harder to hide, gotcha. So I got my caso, dame mi lazo, mami, man, pase mi lago, yeah. More shots to the bar, and everybody need that, yeah, wonderbar.
and that's wonderful. Everybody know me, man, it's hard to go, cause I don't wanna leave, so when will I move it? Mommy, shake it, break it down. We ahead of the town, this is Boston, baby, you know how we get down.
From the hollow to the shore, from the windows to the flow, from the ceiling to the filament, I need a little more. It's attention that I crave, so tonight we set it all. Tonight we set it all.
A little bit here. I think I'm having a little bit of technical difficulties. I'm trying to turn the phone up higher. I'm pretty sure what I'm going to do, I'm going to test my link right now. So I got to turn my volume back on and see if my phone and everything is working. Okay, it does seem like it's working, so Just testing it myself here. So I'm looking to see, like I said, I'm looking for the book around here. Give me one moment. I'm also answering something here. So I will be reading, like I said, from the Jackie Chan book. I'm just looking for it around here. I'm going to be back. I'm playing another song. I like to play, let me see, what is left in the queue here? Feel by Laz and Cat. I try to set this studio. Crosby Tatum actually calls on my show. I said, hey, call up anytime, and call me on the night, and we end up talking about poop. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what it is, but you mentioned the word poop, and people go crazy. Anyway, here's Feel by Laz and Cat. I try to set this studio, and I'll be back.
Yeah. Last Ritz, Cat a B, Miss Smith and Envy, for the little 9 y'all, yeah, check this out, yeah, Triceptus Studios, check it, yeah, yeah. Yo, chillin' in the club, toastin' it up, having some fun, just enjoying the love. I saw you walking by looking all upset, that was a cue for me, just the end of the set. To take you from your low, bring you to your high, tell you positive things like how you so fly. After the club, meet me at the ride, we'll go to the beach, count the stars in the sky. In the meantime, tell me about your 9, you're the finest thing that's dressing all wide. Clothes you got on is a major turn on, me looking at your mind is an instant dawn on. Yeah, God, it's the way how you touching me, sending me a vibe right through my body. You're so attractive and I'm so addictive, yeah, that's something different, I'm dying to get with it.
I like the way you always touching on me. I like the way you put your on my body. I like the way you
prime time player. Used to chew girls up like now and later. Used to have 10 shorties all up in the jazz. Used to bang them all out like they never really had. I was going buck wild, I really didn't care. Had the blinged up loops plus the lined up hair. So fresh, so clean, y'all can help to stare. Living like Liberace with rockets to spare. Till I saw you, you opened up my eyes. The way you showed me love, it was death a surprise. Never ever met a girl who kept it so right. Never ever met a girl who matched my left or right. Now it's just me and you, let's play one on one. What we playing for, she said, I said for your heart. Accept the invitation, let's have some fun. From the nighttime sky to the early morning sunlight.
How can I approach you on this? You make my whole heart to flip. When you're near me, I get chills. Without you around, I'm going ill. I'd probably die if you were mine. Book you for murder, you're a crime. Looking in your eyes, I feel I'm fine. But do the spell, don't waste no time.
I'm back, and like I said, I'm going to be actually reading from the Jackie Chan book, I Am Jackie Chan. Let's see. Okay, when he's actually entering the Drama Theater Academy, and I'd like to read from that, so give me one moment here. Okay, this is actually starting, actually when he's in the Drama Theater Academy. This chapter is called My Brother, My Enemy. The next day, I guess as you know, I'm reading from when he actually was entered into the academy after his mother and father had dropped him off, because at the time he was actually, you know, poor at the time. So I read a little bit before, and now this is actually on page 34, and it's called My Brother, My Enemy. This is from the book I Am Jackie Chan. The next day, I opened my eyes to find that all of our other students had already awakened. Master and biggest brother stood at the front of the room, leading the boys and girls through a grueling set of warm-up exercises. Kicking aside my blanket, I stretched and wandered through the ranks of sweating students, whistling to myself and laughing at their expression of exertion. Some of them shot dirty glances at me, but I didn't care. No one was telling me what to do. No one was yelling at me. And for the first time in my life, I was completely free to do whatever I wanted. Breakfast had already been served, eaten, cleared, so I wandered into the kitchen looking for something to munch on. It was empty, and all the food locked away in the pantry. That was too bad. I was dying of hunger. Then I remembered that my mother had, on the walk over from the ferry terminal, brought me a bag of snacks and sweets. It was still sitting in the entry room along my small suitcase. Rummaging quickly through the bag, I found some oranges and a handful of plum candy. I ran back to the practice hall and sat down in one corner, watching the students work while peeling an orange and stuffing segments into my mouth. After an hour, the master called a short break, and the students broke into small groups to talk and catch their wind. I finished one of the oranges, set others aside for later, and was sucking intently on a piece of dried plum candy when a harsh voice broke my concentration. "Hey, new boy, where'd you get that food?" It was Young Loon, his white shirt damp with perspiration and his face mean. Behind him was his constant sidekick, Yui-Chuk's older brother named Yung Tai. "My mom gave it to me," I said, my mouth full of plum. "What'd you say?" said Yung Lung, his eyes narrowing. Yung Tai stepped forward and stuck his hands in my face. "When you speak to an older student, you better call him Big Brother," he said. "Say it." My mom gave it to me, Big Brother," I repeated, gritting my teeth. "Apologize to your Big Brother," Yung Tai said. "I'm sorry, Big Brother." Yung Lung's face lit with a victorious smile. "Yung Tai, what's the penalty for disrespecting your elders?" Yung Tai thought for a second. "Penalty is no more snacks, Yung Lung." Yung Lung snatched away my second orange while Yung Tai pried open my hand to remove the remaining pieces of plum candy. "Hey," I said. "You got a problem, new boy?" said Yung Tai, his mouth full of candy. The space between their two heads was suddenly filled by Master's stern and questioning face. "Is there a problem here?" he said, an edge in his voice. "No, Master," said Yung Lung, shoving the orange into his pocket where it bulged like a horrible tumor. Yung Tai swallowed with difficulty, his eyes crossing, then rattled out a weak, "No, Master," of his own. I grinned to myself. You see, every piece of dry plum candy has a hot pit at its center. His haste to get rid of evidence, Yung Tai had just swallowed four or five pits at once. "Hung Sing," said Master. His eyebrow quirked. "Everything fine, Master," I chirped, folding my hands in my lap. Yung Lung glared at me and mouthed a curse in my direction. The two little boys went back to practice, and I sat humming my mom's favorite song to myself, watching them happily until the call for lunch. Aw, I'm sitting here and Kitty, little kitten, snuggling, fell asleep. This must be nap time for Kitty. A hard dish to swallow. Next chapter. Meals back on the peak with simple rice, some picked vegetables, and a fried fish or maybe some stewed meat. The food at the academy was about the same, only there were more of it, enough for a mob of young students and whatever teachers were working with Master that day. It wasn't as tasty as as Dad's food. He was possibly one of the best cooks in Hong Kong at the time, but it was filling, and in my seat at Master's side, I got my pick of all the dishes before they were passed down the line. The seating order at mealtimes were always set accordingly to seniority, that is, the boys and girls who've been at the academy longest were at the end next to Master, the Master's wife and the teachers, while the youngest, smallest kids at the far end of the table. I guess it was a matter of respect, but it meant that the little kids got almost nothing. By the time the food had been through the eager hands of a couple dozen young boys and girls, there were just scraps and sauce remaining. Even though I was the newest student, I was treated like an honored guest. I even before bigger brother and older brothers like Yun Lung and Yun Tai. I assumed it was because Master had taken a liking to me. Why would I question the special honor? It meant more food for me. After a few days of being treated like a prince, though, it dawned on me that the kids who used to be my friends were talking to me less and less. They didn't terrorize me the ways Yung Lung and Yung Tai did, but they avoided me. In the morning, while all the other students were aroused for their early workouts, I slept late. As they did painful stretching exercises and practiced kung fu and acrobatics until the edge of collapse, I played alone, imagining myself to be the great General Kung Kong or the Monkey King and some other brave and ancient hero. Sometimes I even joined in on the exercises, practicing handstands and stretches while the other kids, but only for a few moments before bursting out in laughter or becoming distracted. Between my own snacking and the demands of Yung Lung and the older boys, the bag of treats my mom had left me disappeared quickly. I tried saving a few special things like chocolates and cans of orange juice as bribes to win the friendship of some of the smaller kids, but they curtly refused my gifts. Then they'd steal the treats out of my bag when I wasn't looking. It didn't take me long to get the hints. Even though we slept together at night and still together at mealtimes, my special status meant I was doomed to be alone. I guess I could have complained and asked to be treated the same way as everyone else, but that would have meant lots more work and lots less food. And frankly, I was happy to be left to do as I pleased. Little did I know how short this blissful period would last. On the sixth day of my stay at the academy, I found myself in the kitchen examining the last of my mom's treat, a bag of walnuts still on the shelves. I never had a walnut before, so I wasn't sure what they tasted like. And besides, getting the nut meat out of the shell seemed as if it would be a real pain. This was why, out of all the nice things I had, the nuts remained unstolen and uneaten. Well, I'd missed breakfast again, and the needs of my stomach had finally overcome my basic laziness. I had no choice but to try to crack the nuts. Master never left out anything we could use to hurt ourselves or one another. There wasn't a mallet or a knife or even a heavy pot in sight. Squeezing the nuts in my hand just left painful bruises on my palms, and I didn't want to risk my teeth on rock-hard shells. Out of frustration, I began hammering the nuts around the corner until the bag ripped and the walnuts spilled out and around the kitchen. Yelping, I began gathering up my last treasured snacks, only realized that one of the nuts had rolled completely under the refrigerator and was now resting in the dusty crevice between the refrigerator and the wall. I was a plump kid, but still small enough to reach behind the fridge, and I stuck a one arm on the depths of the crack, stretching my hand as far as it would go into the dark, dirty space. After a few minutes of scrambling, I felt a tightness around my waist. Someone had grabbed hold of my pants and was pulling me back into the light. It was the Master, and with him were biggest brother, Yung Lung, and Yung Tai, the last wearing an evil grin. "See, Master," said Yung Tai, "I told you, he's playing around with the electric socket." "No, I wasn't. I was just trying to reach my nuts," I shouted. Yung Lung sniggered. "You should have kept your hands in your pockets, newborn." Biggest brother Yung Tai watched the situation with a wary face as if he'd seen the scene time and again. Master pushed me out of the kitchen and into the practice hall. I was terrified. I'd never seen kindly old Master looking the way he just he looking just then. His face was angry and cold, and I had a sudden flashback to my father's expression just before he was about to punish me hard. Kong Sang, you are fond of snacks, are you? Master asked. I nodded and shook my head, not knowing which reaction would save me. Probably neither. I think it's time for some Jiang Ning, he said, gesturing to Yung Ting. Jiang made is a spicy noodle dish made with meat and served cold. Looking at Yung Ting's face as he passed suggested that he was not headed for the kitchen. The other kids gathered in a wide circle around us, grinning as they were aware of what was about to come next. Finally, Yung Ting returned with a thin, supple rattle cane. Master pushed me down the ground and told me to lie flat on my belly. I closed my eyes and gritted my teeth. I felt my pants being roughly drawn down to my knees as my belly and thighs collapsed on the polished wooden floor. Then a whistle and a crack, a sound that I registered in my brain just to flash before the pain raged from my buttocks up to my spine. I screamed. The taut, bone-hard smack of the cane was more agonizing than my father's bare palm, even with his wide leather belt, the worst that I've ever felt against my skin before. And each rip of the cane, each jolt of torment, was followed by another in steady, atical rhythm until my throat was hoarse and my buttocks almost numb. Six strokes delivered with all my master's force, six rays and bleeding welts across my tender skin. I began to cry, shouting for my mother and father to take me away. I wanted to go home. I wanted to go anywhere rather stay in this place, which had gone from paradise to hell in one hot instant. Be quiet, thundered the master, perspiring from the workout of my beating, unless you want a second helping. I shut up. I saw out of the corner as my tears I saw out of the corners of my tear-filled eyes that Yung Long and Yung Tai were laughing at me, mimicking the face I made during my beating. I saw that Yung Tang and the older girls had flat, expressionless faces betraying neither glee nor sympathy. I saw smiles on most of the young girls, but they were smiles that simply stated the fact we were there too. Now, Chiao-Chiao, and welcome to the club. Master gestured dismissed with his cane and walked out, allowing the rest of the kids to cut short their practice and escape to private things. Yung Lung and Yung Tai walked away together, discussing the best ways of cracking and eating my walnuts. Yung Tung moved toward me as if to help me up, but then turned and suddenly left the room. I lay alone on my belly for what seemed like hours. Everything was over. I knew it now. The special treatment, the easy living, the freedom, the kindness of master had been a sham, and my loneliness was now complete. Even with my uncertain sense of time, I knew that I told my parents I wanted to stay here for a very long time, longer even than I'd even been alive. But I know I didn't want to live anymore, not if my days were going to be like this, not with the fear of more pain and even worse, this feeling of hollow aloneness in my heart. Then I saw the hands on my back. One of the boys had returned, the one who many weeks ago showed me how to do a backflip, and he brought himself a dish of Zhejiang Ming from Big Brother. He had a towel in his hand dripping with cold water from the shower. It'd be easy if you put this on your butt, he said. I know. I managed to smile and took the towel from my hand. That night I slept on my stomach, but I was no longer exiled in my own corner of the hall. The space between me and the other students were now filled with young bodies, marking me at last part as part of the family. The next morning, Master brought me in the front of the hall and officially introduced me to other students. This is our new student, Master said in a solemn voice. He came to us as Chan Kong Sing, but now he's part of our family. He must take a new name. Please welcome your brother, Yong Mao. The students came up as a group and surrounded me, some squeezing my shoulders, some patting me on the back and back, others taking my hands in theirs. They welcomed me. I was one of them. And you know what? When other new boys and girls came to the academy, glorying in their temporary specialness, I put a blank expression on my face, suddenly waiting for their first cup of spicy noodles. And when their day came, I grinned along with the rest. Welcome to the club. So what I want to do is stop right there, and I'm going to play a song, and I'll be back, and I'd like to read a little bit from the website of the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame. So I'm going to play a couple of songs. And let me see, what have I not played? Oh, yes. Going to play once again is Nella Fantasia by Sung Bong Choi, who was actually a contestant on Korea's Got Talent. He plays second, and once again, this is him singing Nella Fantasia, and I'll be back. I'll be playing a couple songs, and I'll be back.
Fantasia, io vedo un mondo giusto, lì tutti vivono in pace e in onestà, io sogno ad
sono sempre libere come le nuvole che volano e domani sa in fondo fantasia, io vedo un mondo chiaro, anche la notte meno scura, io sogno d'anime che sono sempre
I'm unbreakable, can't break what's broken. Gonna shoot the stars, the sunroof's open. Let it shine on me, let
can't
it rain on down. I'm on my
yeah.
way, you hear that sound.
That moment.
told me, your beautiful mama, you're everything I need. Family with me, the waters run deep. Now I'm in the knowing this evil around me, but now that you got me, nothing can sign. I see no big shot with a powerful army. I'm calling it love, and the rest get the dub. I'ma stay wise with the goddess above. I look to the skies with love in my eyes. I'm unbreakable. I'm unbreakable.
Kristen on the track.
Don't be something.
Other MCs to the rear. Too much pain in this game. Swallow too many tears. Kept my eyes focused. Never lost track. Never tossed crack. Kept the gully. Never talked trash. Always kept it hoods. Never crossed backs. Completed small tasks. Through all that with only minor drawbacks. Now it's my time to shine. Cause I'm ready. Flows focused, aimed and steady. Waiting for the levee to break. A heavy mistake. To let my mind flow through the gate. I unload on my foes. Call me sit you to break. Bridge place. Now I'm fixed to escape. Jack Sparrow when the barrel starts sniffing my face. Never ever hesitate. When you ask for the real. Is this that C dot? The P dot that's doing it real big.
When they mention the best, I kill songs, I'm ill, I'm built strong. I'm above most these rappers, I'm standing with still song. They see me still here and they ask if he's still on. Without a question, he's a legend, the skills are still strong. Need a boost to make it better, I can better the booth. I better other soldiers in the field like medical troops. I better the youth, the proof, I could never be you. I see my future real clear like I'm ahead of the truth. I'm so dope, they get addicted to me. So I don't write rhymes, I have to go prescription or free. I keep it hot, every drop, by any means necessary. You might be good, but consider me legendary.
Go, say what you want, corporate we start. You're witnessing a legend in the making. Go, say what you want, corporate we start. You're witnessing a legend in the making.
Alrighty, I'm back, and this is Shelly and Ninja Sunday, my little furball co-host. Jack Chan Kitty and Marky Balboa, who's actually a little bit more awake now, and I think myself I need some coffee. The next thing I wanted to bring up is the Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame. And I've been trying to raise money to help with the new museum. And what the museum is about, you can actually go there and check out on the website. I'm one of the board advisors, the Hollywood Stuntman's Hall of Fame board advisors. I was walking on board by the founder, CEO himself, John G. Hagner, when he had him on my show. And about the museum, hundreds of exhibits of rare artifacts and memorabilia of stars and stunt performers of motion pictures and television featuring personal items of John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, Steve McQueen, and stunt legends of the movies, including Yakima Canute, Cliff Lyons, Dave Shaft, Ronnie Rundell, and hundreds of others. There are over 350 concrete blocks that contain the footprints and handprints, as well as signatures of many of the greats of the cinema, a collection that outranks those that are located at the Man's Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. This rare collection has taken its founder, John G. Hagner, more than 65 years to gather and preserve for posterity, featuring parts of costumes, weapons, stunts equipment, photos and paintings and drawings, hats and caps, boots and shoes, and hundreds of items from the movies and television, plus videos, films, and film clips. The Hall of Fame has been in existence since 1973 and became a nonprofit organization in 1984, dedicated to preserving the history of the stunt profession and to honoring stunt people the world over. Currently, the Hall of Fame is without a home and needs financial support to enable them to afford a building in which to welcome visitors. Anyone interested in participating in this effort may make a tax-deductible donation to the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame and mailed to 81 West Cane Creek Boulevard. That's 81 West Cane, K-A-N-E, Creek, C-R-E-E-K, Boulevard, number 12, Moab, M-O-A-B, Utah, 84532. For more information, contact John Hagger at 435-260-2160. His email address is johnhagner@gmail.com, J-O-H-N-H-A-G-N-E-R@gmail.com. For additional information, go to Facebook and click in Fallen for the Stars, then as Artists of the Stars and Stunt Stars and Legends. And I know it's something in the community itself. You know, I know that in many different genres, but, you know, comedy, drama, horror, sci-fi, there are stunts in those genres too. So if you want to check that out on the webpage there, check that out also. So what I'm doing today, I didn't have a scheduled guest, but it is Ninja Sunday, and I have probably about 20 minutes left on the show, and I'd like to play some more music. And I promise my friend Sun Bung Choi, who was, oh, he's over in Korea, and he's working on coming back to America, and he was a contestant on Korea's Got Talent, placed second, and I think it was 2011. And what this young man had happened with him is when he was actually 3 years old, he was taken to an orphanage, and he ran away from the orphanage at age 5 due to abuse and such and neglect. So he slept on the streets of Korea, and he survived by selling, like, energy drinks and gums and just to survive it. Age 5. I don't even know if you can even fathom that, but just living on the streets and, you know, growing up there, sleeping in bathroom stalls and such, and what kept him going, you know, was his dream to actually sing. And he's even struggling now and trying to, you know, he's trying to make it and to be signed and stuff, and he wants to come back to America, you know, to be signed. He wants to come across that when he's learning also, you know, English. He's doing the best he can. So the song that I've been playing a couple times on my show, I think maybe this is the second time, though, Sung Bung Choi. This is the song, Nella Fantasia, which he actually sang on Korea's Got Talents for his audition on the show. So, again, this is Sung Bung Choi, and I'll be back.
Fantasia, io vedo un mondo giusto, lì tutti vivono in pace e in onestà. Io sogno l'anime che sono sempre
Alrighty, and I'm back, and that's Song Bong Choi's. I sang on Ella Fantasia on Korea's Got Talent on his audition. He actually placed second in the competition. Now I'm going to continue with the book, and I am Jackie Chan. I call it the Chan book here, which actually is a book. And next chapter I wanted to read is Learning the Hard Way, and this was when he was younger and actually in the academy. Matthew's personality seemed to have changed overnight before my initiation. He's been my protector and my only friend. He would spend evenings drinking tea, eating cookies, and talking about my favorite subject, me. Afterwards, it turned invisible. I became just another problem, one whose solution was rigorous training, ear-shattering lectures, and the occasional beating. I quickly learned to watch the other children carefully. Whenever they stood up, I stood up. If they sat down, I sat down. Whatever they said, I said. Whatever they did, I did. Not only did it make it less likely to master would single me out for punishment, but it also helped me to create a bond between us, me, my brothers and sisters. I made friends with many of the younger children, even my worst enemies. Yung Lo and Yung Tai stopped making me the constant target of their torments. Things got better. Life was hard but simple. I slowly grew used to the routine. This was a typical day at the academy. At 5 a.m., biggest brother would wake us up, first with a shout, then a brisk shake of our shoulders if we didn't get up immediately. Then we'd fold and put our way our blankets and march outside to the stairway, then ran up the side of the building, climbing to the roof, making as little noise as possible to avoid disturbing the neighbors who were all asleep. We'd run several laps around the rooftop just to wake up. After the run, we'd march back downstairs to breakfast, the sweat still wet on our bodies. There was no time to stop for a bathroom break because it was Master's theory that anyone who used the toilet in the morning meant we hadn't been training hard enough. As he put it, all of the body's toxins should have been sweated out during the morning run. And so the first time I made the mistake asking to relieve myself, I was given 10 extra laps to run. But actually, let loose in your pants, but heaven help you if Master found out. Breakfast itself was barely a meal, just a bowl of congee, which is a thin rice porridge. The idea was to fool the stomach and think it was full, but not to eat so much as to get it in the way of practice, which lasted 5 or 6 straight hours with barely a chance to breathe. Warm-up exercises, then footwork training, martial arts, and aerobics, all performed in tight ranks in the academy hall, boys and girls together. The most difficult instruction we had was in the aerial maneuvers that give Chinese opera its visual splendors, flips and somersaults, all learned and practiced without a net or harness. After watching the others do their black flips in ease and grace, I was eager to learn. Masters gratified at my enthusiasm told Yung Ting and Yung Lung to teach me how. Without warning, they grabbed me by the waist and flipped me over. All of a sudden, the room was whirling around and the floor was much too close to my head. The next time, your hand should be farther back, said Biggest Brother. You have to be stiffer in your neck and head. And you lung, and then they told me to try it on my own. This was the sum total of the teaching I had in this spectacular and dangerous maneuver. After a series of tries on my own, under Master's watchful eye, I managed to land awkwardly on my feet, but not before some terrible, frightening fall. I was lucky, escaping with just bruises, head bumps, and the occasional twisted limb. Some kids weren't so fortunate. When a really bad injury happened, there was no doctor around to make sure that no permanent damage had occurred. In fact, being hurt or sick was seen by Master as an attempt to get out of practice. In his eyes, if you could move, you could fly, so anything short of crippling handicap was just a lame excuse, so to speak. One day, one of the younger boys went to a corner and sat down during somersault practice, immediately drawing the attention of Master. Early that morning, he complained quietly to Biggest Brother about feeling dizzy. Biggest Brother told him to take it easy, saying that it explained it all to Master. But Master didn't want to hear any excuses. Why are you sitting, boy, he asked, his voice icy with contempt. Master, he told me he's not feeling well, said Yung Ting, stepping between them. Master looked at Biggest Brothers with surprise. Yung Ting had never stood up to Master before. Then again, no one ever did. Brushing Yung Ting aside with a gesture, Master pulled the woozy student to a seat. Do a dozen somersaults and you'll feel better, he said. A suggestion from Master was the same as a command, so the boy rubbed his head and attempted to flip himself through the air. He made 2 shaky somersaults and fell sideways, smashing his head against the corner of the table, landing on the floor. Unconscious, all of us looked on in horror. Blood was oozing from a wound on his temple. He wasn't moving. You'd think an injury like that might be reasonably be expected to result in a quick call to the hospital. Instead, Master leaned down and checked the boy's pulse. Yung Ting, bring me my bag, he said with his voice firm. Biggest Brother, his face pale, went into the hall to Master's room and returned with a small leather bag that was Master's all-purpose first aid kit. From the bag came a handful of tobacco leaves, which Master pressed against the wound to stop the bleeding. Moving aside, he told him, the eldest brother quietly lifted the boy's prone body and set it near the wall, out of the way. Soon practice continued as usual. 4 hours later, the boy woke, winching at the pain in his skull. Master, he's awake, said Yinching. Master walked over the boy and helped him to a seat. You've been sleeping while the others were working hard, he said bluntly. When lunch is over, you can show them what a well-rested person can do. The boy nodded groggily and joined the rest of us for a noon meal. Leaning on Big Earth's brother's arm, I saw an expression on Yunting's face. It was a grim look, a look of hatred. Lunch at the school was a more substantial meal than breakfast, consisting of soup made from tofu and green vegetables that rice with fish. After eating, we finally allowed to go to the bathroom, then was moved on to a more essential and more painful part of our training, flexible exercise. Opera performances had to be able to do a complete leg split horizontally on the ground and vertically, holding one leg above the head. And so we practiced splits against the wall, against the floor, and against everything. As soon as the exercises began, the room would be full of howling because, frankly, it hurt like hell. The worst thing was that if you couldn't split all the way, Master would send Big Brother over to push your body down until it felt like your joints were going to come apart. And if you couldn't do it alone, he would call all the students over and they would hold your legs apart while he pushed you. It didn't matter how much or hard you cried, eventually you'd go down into a split. It was a nightmare. This might sound terrible, but eventually you actually felt happy to see other kids crying because it meant when someone else was being tortured, not you. Oh, God, it was awful. And it would go on for hours until walking or sitting or even standing was agony. After we practiced splits, we would move on to handstands. An opera performer had to be comfortable on his hands as on his feet. So the brief handstands that any lesson child can manage were not enough for us. Master decreed that his students would have to be able to stay on their hands for at least half an hour at a time. Imagine that, half an hour at a time. Woo! After 15 minutes, our arms would grow limp, our blood would rush to our heads, and our stomachs would begin to turn flip-flops. But we couldn't show any weakness at all. A limb that moved would receive a whack from the master's reticane, and woe to the student who allowed himself to fall over. Still, master could pay attention to only a single student at a time, and when he was occupied with just his or her form, a blow at a time, one of the senior brothers would quietly turn his body to lean his legs against the wall. The rest of us would do the same until master turned around, of course, which point he'd see an innocent row of beautiful young students upside down and ramrod straight. After practice, we'd be divided into groups, although after doing splits for hours, we felt divided already. Some of us would be sent to do chores like washing dishes, cleaning the hall, attending to the ancestral shrine. The rest would go to singing or wiping instruction. Then came dinner, which was just a large version of lunch. We would always try to draw out dinner as long as possible because what came afterward made all the physical tone of the day look like a walk on the beach. Once dishes had been cleared away, we'd file silently down the corridor into a large room with desks and chairs. At the front, in the room of the chocolate, just a couple of obscene words, stray graffiti, and unflattering drawings of the older brothers, or sometimes it was one of us was feeling really brave of master. The first time I walked into a room, I felt betrayed. It was a classroom. I didn't mind training until I cried from exhaustion and being beaten when I deserved it, but lessons, this was more than I could stand. Luckily, I wasn't alone in that feeling. None of us at the academy were scholarly types, and putting 50 twitchy children in a single room with an unsuspecting tutor with a recipe for disaster. The lessons were mostly tedious stuff like reading, writing, classics of literature, and Chinese history. The tutor was mostly old, retired school teachers are young, naive college graduates. Master was nowhere to found, having left the academy to gamble or visit old friends. There's an old line about mice and cats and what one does when the other's away. And so, as soon as our poor tutor began, his boring lecture in the dry teacher's voice would do our best to drive him crazy. Books would be thrown on the floor, faces would be made behind the teacher's back, class would break into fits of laughter. Balls of crumpled paper would fly. Some of the younger boys would begin to wrestle until the other ones had to dive in to break it up. The girls would talk loudly with each other, ignoring the chalkboard and whatever dull lessons had been scrawled on it, replacing our much more amusing pitches. If the tutor raised his voice, we'd just drown him out. Of course, if master came back, he'd find us sitting quietly and politely in our seats because the classroom had a window and overlooked the courtyard, and all of us had sharp eyes and ears. Sounds like a little stinker, doesn't he, Jackie? It wasn't easy to find teachers who could stand this kind of treatment, considering the stingy pay master gave us. If you walked into a classroom full of disobedient students, didn't make much money, and they treated you like dirt, you'd quit too, wouldn't you? During my time at the academy, we burned out 11 different teachers, none of whom lasted more than a year. About the only thing we ended up learning was how to say, good afternoon, teacher, because that was how far we'd get before things dissolved into chaos. Sometimes when we were on trips outside of the academy, we run into schoolboys and schoolgirls in uniform, good little boys and girls who laughed at us ragged-looking kids. All the boys with shaved heads and all the girls with short hair had no pretty dresses. And even though they teased us, we didn't envy them at all. We never even thought about what it would be like to be in a regular school, sitting in class and doing lessons all day. Those kids had nothing in common with us. Our life was about surviving. Each of us knew that. If Master hadn't hit us that day, then that day was a very good one, and we were lucky. And that was all that mattered. If Master was in a good mood after hours of lessons, our lessons was another training session, though less rigorous and more fun than the morning and afternoon sessions. This is when we learn interesting things like Kung Fu, face painting and the proper way to use props and opera costumes. All in all, between our morning and afternoon and evening sessions, we practiced more than 12 hours a day. Our art was a complex one involving many different skills, and we'd expect to be experts in all of them before we set a single foot on the stage. Training would go on until bedtime, which was midnight. All of us students, from the six-year-old newcomers to the biggest brothers and sisters, had the same schedule, 5 a.m. to 12 a.m., 5 hours of sleep, and then another day of training. Day after day, 7 days a week, free time was rare, and a cause of celebration opportunities to go out away from the academy was even rarer. So until we grew old and skilled enough to perform, the gray walls of the China Drama Academy was nearly all the world we knew. About the only contact I had with outside world was though my mother. We came to visit me at the academy every single week. At first, I loved these visits because with my mom was what I missed most when I first came to the academy, lying on the floor and staring at the cracked white ceiling of the practice hall. I would remember all the nights she sung to me asleep and all the nice things she cooked for me. And I would remember how I felt to lie in my lower bunk, knowing that my mom was in my bed above me, that she and Dad would protect me from any kind of harm. But strangely enough, I had been at the academy for several months. My attitude began to change. I learned how to survive at the school, and my carefree days on the peak seemed farther and farther away. When my mom visited, she brought me candies and snacks, and I eagerly took them and shared them with my friends. But our visits were also times when she showered all the affection on me, and she stayed up during the days when she was away. I was a growing boy, and her hugs and kisses humiliated me in front of other students. Some of them have visitors, too. Big brother Yung Lung's grandfather came and saw him once in a while, but their meetings were short and simple. His grandfather would ask if he were healthy, and he'd say yes. And then they'd talk oil about the family and about the academy. And then his grandfather would leave after thanking Master for his diligent training. Not my mom. In addition to cuddling me like I was still a little child, she always babied me another way, and I couldn't stand that. Along with her sacks of treats, she also bring large plastic bags full of boiling water, asking Master for a large metal basin. She poured the bags in and gave me a hot bath, scrubbing me down and washing my hand. I was the cleanest kid at the school, but also the most embarrassed. After visits, my clothes damp and my head wrapped in a towel, I'd be cornered by the older brothers, each with something stupid to say. "Hey, Mama's boy, how was your bath?" Yung Ma would sneer, not to be outdone. Yung Tao would jump, and she'd remember to change your diapers. And then another brother, "Maybe she wipes your ass after you crap too, huh?" And I just have to grit my teeth and walk away, because if there was one unbreakable with the academy, well, there were a lot of them, but this was the one we're taught never to forget. It was that you couldn't hit an older brother, even if he hit you first, because if he hit you, he probably deserved it. But if you hit him, it was a terrible act as hitting Master himself. And hitting Master was unthinkable. It was like hitting God. One day my mother arrived. Bath water in the hand, I grabbed the bags from her and dropped them on the floor. "No bath today, Mom," I said. "I don't need one. I suppose you don't need you to wash me. I'm big enough to wash myself." My mother looked at me with silent shock. I was always a rude little boy and always talked back to my father with the expected results, but I never said anything impolite to my mother. She didn't say anything. She just nodded quietly and sat down to open the sack of snacks instead. She was untying the knots and kept the plastic bag closed. I noticed that her hands were raw and red, chafed almost to the point of bleeding. And then I remembered her long walk from the house on the peak to the bus stop and even longer ride down the mountain road in lines at the ferry dock and crowded twisting streets from Kowloon Terminal to the school. Mom had boiled the water for the bath in the basket, as kissing, carried it for over an hour to bring it here to me. She does this once a week, every week, and I was telling her that all care and exertion and pain was for nothing. I pulled her hands away from the bags and hugged her tight. "I'm sorry, Mom. I guess I didn't realize how dirty I was. I really could use a bath." And I smiled up at her. She really was the greatest mother in the world, and she smiled back. When she left that day, the old boys were ready to taunt me as usual. "How was the bath today, honey?" said Yung-Lil, pulling his round face into a mockery of maternal affection. I looked at him and wrinkled my nose. "It was great, big brother," I said, scrubbing the towel against my head. "You know, maybe you guys should consider taking one yourself, because something really stinks around here." And as their jaws dropped to the floor, I walked away humming one of my mother's songs, towel in one hand, her bag of treats in the other. Wow. This book itself, like it says, it's falling apart, but I just will not get rid of it. So I'll read some more on another show. But, too, once again, I'm playing some music, and I wanted to read once again about the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame. if anybody want to check that out. Once again, I'm helping to raise money. And this is not just for, you know, the past years. It's for, you know, the present and for the future and about the museum. Hundreds of exhibits of rare artifacts and memorabilia of stars and stunt performers and motion pictures and television featuring personal items of John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, Steve McQueen, and stunt legends of the movies including Yakima Canute, Cliff Lyons, Jay Sharp, Ronnie Rendell, and hundreds of others. There were over 350 concrete blocks that contained the footprints and the handprints as well as signatures of many of the greats of the cinema, a collection that outranks those that are located at the Mann's Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. The rare collection has taken its founder, John G. Hagner, more than 65 years to gather and preserve for posterity, featuring parts of costumes, weapons, stunt equipment, photos, and paintings and drawings, hats and caps, boots and shoes, and hundreds of items from the movies and television plus videos, films, and film clips. The Hall of Fame has been in existence since 1973 and became a nonprofit organization in 1984 dedicated to preserving the history of the stunt profession and to honoring stunt people the world over. Currently, the Hall of Fame is without a home and needs financial support to enable them to afford a building in which to welcome visitors. Anyone interested in participating in this effort may make a tax-deductible donation to the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame and mail to 81 West Cane Creek Boulevard, number 12, Moab, Utah, 84532. 81 West Cane, K-A-N-E, Creek, C-R-E-E-K, Boulevard, number 12, Moab, M-O-A-B, Utah, U-T-A-H, Utah, you know, 84532. For more information, contact John Haggard, and that's the CEO, the founder of the Hollywood Stuntmen's Hall of Fame, 435-260-2160. His email address is johnhagner@gmail.com, J-O-H-N-H-A-G-N-E-R @gmail.com. For additional information, go to Facebook and click in Falling Love Stars and Artists of the Stars and Sun Stars and Legends. And I really, truly believe that, you know, it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing where, you know, many, many years that everything that's in, you know, storage, but it's just not for the past. It's actually for the present and the future. And actually, John told me himself when he was on my show that Jackie Chan is actually an inductee Hall of Fame. Well, it's almost like out of time here, so I wanted to play one more time to end the show. Sung Meng Choi's, once again, Nella Fantasia. He was the young man who went on there. He was an orphan since the age of 5, and what kept him alive was his dream of singing, and he wants to sing like opera, you know, and to be signed as that. He, you know, if you want to go to his page, check him out. Sung Meng Choi, S-U-N-G hyphen. B-O-N-G, Choi, C-H-O-I. There are a couple pages, but he does have a Facebook page, and he himself, just be patient with him because he is learning English, and the translation on the page, you have to be giving him a little bit of patience, but he's truly a wonderful, wonderful human being, and I wanted to end the show with the song that he sang on Korea's Got Talent. And when he actually told the judge of his life, the three judges, they sat there and started, like, almost crying. And then when he started singing Nella Fantasia, which I'm going to end the show with, the judges were, like, in tears. And also, it was just something where the audience members were in tears. So, I mean, I'm going to end the show with Sung Meng Choi and his song that he was singing on the show itself, Nella Fantasia. And everyone have a beautiful Sunday.
Nella fantasia io vedo un mondo giusto, lì tutti vivono in pace e in onestà. Io sogno d'anime che sono sempre
fantasia.